The other day, Dad was having a bad day. Now, Jeff and my dad has had some recent health struggles. And so I was talking to my mom on the phone, and she said, you know, I think you need to call your dad. He just sounds depressed. And I called, and he didn't sound a little depressed. But that made me wonder, what does that mean when someone sounds depressed? And how involved is that? And is that just something that you pick up with a sixth sense? Or is that something that you can actually scientifically figure out? And maybe today we're going to find out the answer to that. Hi, everybody. I'm Darren.
And I'm Jeff. Welcome to the Voice Box. Today we're talking to Don Wright at Clarigent. And Don, you're doing some work on figuring out what it sounds like for people to sound depressed. Is that right?
We are. So it was an interesting lead in there, because one of the things that I've used as an example of kind of thinking through how technology like we have works is a mother's intuition. I've explained before, you know, everybody, I think at times is been on the phone with their mom, and their mom has said something's wrong, isn't it? And they maybe don't even understand why they can hear that in somebody's voice, but they could just tell something's different. And yes, we have technology originally developed at Cincinnati Children's Hospital over the last 10 or 15 years. And about 3.5 years ago, we took it and turned it into a product that's now being used by therapists and physicians in schools and adult therapy and in emergency departments.
So give me an idea. What are some things that you listen for? What are you able to detect? Is it pauses? Is it words someone chooses? Is it the way they're delivering the words? What are you finding?
Yeah, so it's... So the technology is all machine learned. So it started originally with a blank slate. Actually, the original technology came out of linguistics. So it was written word. And the inventor, John Pestian, was looking at, he has a, and now we have a library of 1,300 suicide notes, unfortunately, of people who have completed a suicide. And that's how the original training was done. And then that was taken into multiple clinical trials where they started using vocal biomarkers, because that's a much more interesting way to try to use the product in a clinical setting. Still works on written word, but we're using it and pretty much everything you just said. So the linguistics are in the product. Linguistics are words that are said, how often those words are said, how often those words are said in conjunction with other words and within a certain number of words of those words. And so, like I said, it's all machine learned. So we didn't put any of those characteristics into the classifier. The software did, and then we put it through clinical trials. But some of the things that it found can be found in the literature. So personal pronoun use, for example, goes up when you are moving towards crisis. So does end words. So some are obvious, like finally and things like that, but a lot of them end in L-Y, right? And then the acoustics of what we do is how guttural your voice is, how breathy, speeding up and slowing down nanoseconds between syllables and words, and flattening of vowels and all those types of things.
So if somebody is listening to this and they're thinking, maybe I'm oversimplifying this. Are there things that the average person can listen for if they're not a software and not a machine and not trying to analyze this? I mean, what are some, you mentioned finally, are there some other things, or just pronoun usage? Give me sort of an example. I'm so fascinated by what kind of things you can detect.
There are. I mean, any, you know, if you think about, I mean, look, FBI interrogators are taught how to listen to you and figure out whether you're lying or not, right? I mean, and they listen for certain things. I think psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers, especially ones who deal with, you know, our first product is all about crisis and suicide prevention. We have a product coming out very soon that is depression. So trying to classify different levels of depression. That's working in our lab. It's not out in our commercial product yet. But there are things you can listen for. You know, we're a clinical decision support tool. So by definition, you could give an infinite amount of time, listen to recordings of what a person said and be trained to do it. The problem is that a physician doesn't have infinite amount of time. A physician can't spend their entire time while they're listening to a patient trying to count up how many times they said a personal pronoun or something like that, right? And the software and the computer is doing what computers do best, right? Counting all of that, putting it through a classifier and coming back and giving the doctor another point of view, basically, as something to help with that doctor making a diagnosis, right? So we're not there to replace the doctor. We're there to give that doctor insights that they're not getting right now and really let them engage in the conversation with their patient and not spend the time trying to figure out if, you know, somebody's getting more breathy or speeding up. Again, things like breathy or guttural or speeding up what they say or slowing down what they say, I think that's where intuitively, that's probably what a mom is hearing, right? A lot of the acoustics, right? So you're speaking differently than you normally do.
But they may not be totally conscious of what aspects of the speech.
No, I don't think unless they're trained, any person would know why they feel like something might be wrong. They just feel it, right? And so we can articulate that to them.
So Don, if you were my doctor and I were coming in to see you, what would I see? Is there like a computer flashing, you know, analysis on the screen while we're talking, or just a microphone on the table, or what does it look like?
Yeah, so our products right now are used in one of two ways. We have, if you're using it in the therapy session, it's a 5-minute part of the therapy session. So what the patient would see, the patient knows it's happening, but it's just software that the doctor can download to their smartphone or to a tablet or can run on a laptop. And it's really just listening, and all that device is doing is streaming audio up to our servers where it's being, you know, changed into text, and we're figuring out who is talking. We strip out what the therapist is saying and only really look at what the patient is saying. And then what happens is within a minute of the end of that 5-minute conversation, the therapist can get back a result that in that use might change how the rest of that conversation is going to go, right? So it's being used by one of our customers in a school setting where if that came back with an alert, then they, instead of talking about ADHD or OCD issues that day, they might talk about why that child might be moving more towards crisis or whatnot. We have another version where the therapist uses it between visits. And so what happens is a link is sent out to the patient, and they basically call in on Zoom, and they either talk to trained people that we employ, or the doctor can do it themselves or have somebody that they employ, and they do the 5-minute interview. And in all these cases, everything is basically pulled back to a dashboard. So in addition to getting that in time result, they are getting an indication over time of whether that person's getting better or worse or moving more towards crisis, which I think is really interesting. And then if you're a big group using it, you can do all kinds of things. You can slice and dice that data. You can look at, you know, the agency can look at how are all 5th grade boys doing across different school districts? How are different school districts doing compared to other school districts? How are boys versus girls doing, all those types of things? So,
Don, this is a personal mission for you. How did you come to do this and be involved in such an important work?
So it's interesting. So I became involved in this because of a previous company that was doing work in pharmacogenomics around trying to figure out which therapies would work best for somebody. I then found this technology. This was going to be our next product. We sold the first company, moved into the second company. We were in the process of starting this company. We had, you know, legally formed it and were putting the business plan together and rounding up investment. And while that was going on, my son killed himself. So I always say the truth is I didn't start this company because my son had died. Ironically, we were already building a suicide prevention company when my son died, but it certainly has made it into a bigger kind of life mission for me and for many of the people in the company. I mean, I have a lot of people in my company who I've worked with for years or decades. My co-founder knew my son was 28 when he died. My co-founder's known him since he was 6 months old. So, this has become a mission for all of us.
Is there some of that continues to drive you when you say, like, oh, I don't know, am I done this? Or you're thinking like, no, we're doing this for him. His memory lives on in what we're doing. We're going to save other people now too.
Well, there's pictures of him hanging on the wall at the office. For sure. I mean, it's interesting because I switch back and forth at times. You know, I run a suicide prevention foundation. I was just asked to be on the board of directors of the American Association of Suicidology. I speak internationally and nationally about suicide prevention, and I do it both from a Clarigent perspective, but also from just a straight suicide prevention. So I go back and forth between the hats, but it doesn't matter which hat you have on. There's still kind of Justin, my son, there. And honestly, I was, I now am part of the fraternity of fathers who have lost sons. And so there's a whole thing we do. People took care of me that had lost sons and daughters. And unfortunately, in the last 5 days have talked to three different sets of parents. Two who have children who just attempted, which are much better conversations, and one who lost a child. And so it's something that's getting worse, not better. The pandemic has made it dramatically worse. We've got CDC statistics out there now that say that half of high school age children have admitted to thinking about suicide in the last 12 months, and a quarter of all adults. And I think that both of those numbers, especially the quarter of all adults, is probably underreported. We have school districts like San Francisco, where they lost 9 kids during the pandemic to suicide. This isn't getting better. And part of the reason it isn't getting better is because we have forever. So now I'm going to start talking like my soapbox guy on a foundation. We have never treated mental health in this country like we do other diseases. And we've never put the money behind it. We've never taken it seriously until the parity laws came out. It was easier to go see a chiropractor than it was to go get permission to go see a psychiatrist. And then you're only allowed to see them, 10 times in a year and things like that. Those are changing. The stigma has gone away a lot about talking about these things. It's still hard to get people to talk about suicide, but at least we're talking about anxiety and depression. And understanding that, the way to get depression fixed isn't just to tell somebody to buck up and, get back to work. And that anxiety is a real thing. It's not just somebody, being flaky or something like that. I mean, these are real diseases that cause all types of problems. It's fascinating to me that the number one cost to the system around the world stems from depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues, and it's larger than the next four combined. And we know that because you can count the dollars it costs, but for some reason we don't take it seriously enough to actually go focus on it and try to get it done. Our tagline is bringing science to mental health, because I just really feel like that just hasn't happened. I mean, we just keep creating new drug classes for depression and think that's going to solve the problem. And it's clearly not.
I love everything you're doing, and we want to support it. So give me the idea. Who can use, the name of the product is Clarity. The name of the company is Clarigen, but Who's going to be using this? Are schools using this? Are psychiatrists using this? Are counseling offices? Who can use this to help improve lives of people?
Yeah, so I guess it's important to say it is a clinical tool, so it's to be used by professionals. It's not a self-help tool that you download from the App Store or something like that. It's to help a clinician, a therapist, a physician. It's to help them determine what's going on. We have three groups of target populations that we're selling into right now, and we have active implementations in all of these. One is schools, and in many cases, that's the agencies that support the schools, because a lot of schools use outside agencies to bring them in for their children, or the therapists that the school district uses, or counselors within that that school district. So that's one. Outpatient behavioral health group practices, so that's either adult or children, are using it right now. And then hospital systems are a little bit different, because obviously a hospital system encompasses a lot of different things: inpatient, outpatient, surgery, ED. The hospitals that we have as customers right now are using it in their emergency department to help triage, and they're using it in their outpatient population. They are starting to look at it from an admission and from, you know, hospitals have all kinds of issues with 30-day readmits and things like that. And so they're starting to use it at discharge to try to figure out what an appropriate plan, whether, first of all, whether that person's really ready to leave, and second, what an appropriate safety plan is for that person to try to keep them from ending up back in the hospital.
We applaud you for everything you're doing to help a case of mental health, but also to help save lives and prevent some of the unfortunately those awkward conversations, the horrible conversations that you have to have, that none of us wants to have. So let's be able to detect the mental health issues ahead of time, prevent someone from going to crisis, and have happier outcomes here. Thanks so much for stopping and visiting with us today.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Don, it was great. Take care and good luck with everything you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.
Jeff, you've actually been doing some work with Clarigen and Clarity. What are your thoughts as you're seeing things they're doing and things they might be able to do? And what's the future of this?
Well, yeah, you're right. We have been working with them. Let me tell you what we do. We at Cobalt are helping with the speech to text, converting the speech to text. But also, Don mentioned that they don't keep the therapist's speech. They need to separate out the therapist's speech from the patient's speech, and we help with that process, which is called diarization, of identifying when does the speaker change from one to the other and so forth. Those are technical details, but you know, any speech implementation, there are some technical details that you just have to get right. I think, and people have heard me say this before, I think that the application here of speech analysis to mental health and also physical health is one of the great, I don't want to say untapped, because people are tapping it, but it's one of the great undertapped, is that a word? I'm inventing a new word. It's one of the great undertapped areas of applications of speech technology. I think there's a lot still to be done on identifying not just suicide risk and depression, but also other mental health issues and physical health issues, and being able to catch things in time to address them. I think it's really great what Don and Clarigent are doing in this field, and I applaud them and everybody else who's working in this field as well.
Yeah, it's not just life-changing, but it's literally life-saving in many situations. So it's amazing, right? The technology that exists and is continuing to be developed that can really do that. So we applaud them. It was fascinating talking to him today and hearing some of the things they're doing to change and save lives. Everybody, thanks so much for joining us today on The Voice Box.
We'll see you next time.